We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Presented by Prize Picks, $100 match on your first deposit with the promo code LightYears. Welcome to LightYears. The Warriors season officially over, 46-36. More wins than last year, but they're going to be in the 10 seed, which is kind of comical, but all things equal, I think most people would say this is more or less the same team we saw last year with maybe a little more upside. Andy Liu will be back. Later today, we'll be recording a preview of the Warriors and Kings play-in matchup Tuesday night. But before that, to do a live reaction here, I got my guys Tommy Gunn and Justin Grant from the Golden Spaces podcast sitting in. What's up, guys? All right, I'll take us to equal footing now.
Sam, thanks for having me on, man. Feels kind of crazy that the season's already over. You know, it feels like it went by very fast, but here we are playing. Here we come. Familiar territory.
I'm going to say, like, you know, I don't think anyone's satisfied with being the 10 seed or where this is landing right now, but I'd be lying if I said having the chance to send the Kings home with how much Kings fans talk doesn't make me just like a little bit happy.
Definitely. I appreciate you having me on too. Like, it's always a good time to join you guys and talk about this team that we love so much, you know, like
unfortunately.
So I feel like I'm pulling up the standings here, and obviously we'll do a reaction to everything going. Warriors are going to end the season 46-36, as do the Sacramento Kings. The standings are not there. The official update is in. And the first thing that jumps out to me when I look at this, and it was true last year, and I think it's just more true, is the level of parity across the league. Like, I don't know if you guys remember, like when we were younger, there used to be way more teams that won 50-some games. You'd see teams touch 60. Now it's only the Celtics. It felt like it was – there were clear tiers. At this point, I don't know, other than Denver, who kind of sleptwalked through the season as the defending champs, and I guess you got to throw Boston in there, it feels like everyone else is somewhat on equal footing. So even though the Warriors have a rough draw of it here, like, I don't know, man, 15 of the teams in the league are between 45 and 50 wins. Is there really that much differentiation between them?
No, there isn't. And I think, I mean, in a playoff series, I wouldn't say we would be favored against a lot of the teams in the top six, but they also wouldn't scare me that much, if that makes sense, despite all the deficiencies on the team. Outside of Denver, I think Denver would, that would be a scary matchup, right? Just because they have the best starting lineup in the league. Their bench is a little bit weaker than it was last year, but you know, you still have the best player in the world plus an incredible starting five. But like, does Minnesota really scare me in a series? Not really. I'm not saying the Warriors would win in six, but I'm also saying they could easily win in six or seven. You know, I think Minnesota would be favored, but I mean, that's up and down the playoff table in the West. And something that just stands out real quick to me is the potential travel. If the Warriors do win the 9-10, it's a lot easier than having to go to New Orleans for that second play-in game. So that's a nice kind of break with, or well, no, I guess New Orleans is going to lose, huh?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, so this table is not updated.
Yeah, the Suns are going to jump to six. The Suns are going to jump to six. So yeah, potentially going to New Orleans could be, that would not be fun after having to play in Sac and then fly down there. So
I'll just reset this for anyone who's unaware. The Warriors are going to play Sacramento Kings on Tuesday night. And then should they advance, they'll play the loser of the New Orleans Pelicans, who are hosting the Los Angeles Lakers in the other play-in game. So the most likely path here is you beat Sacramento, and then the Lakers beat the hell out of the Pelicans today. Kind of caught me off guard, because the Pelicans, if they won, would have avoided the play-in altogether, but now they have to go that way. Still, I don't think it's a given the Lakers are going to win that game. I think, I don't know. What do you guys think? Let's talk about that game real quick. Who do you got favored in Lakers, Pelicans?
I'm going to go with the Lakers. I think just any situation where it's like, win this game and you're in, I'm just going to probably take LeBron. And he kind of has their number in a way. Like, they got a lot of athletes in New Orleans and they got some shooting and stuff like that. But I just think he's just going to outsmart them. And for some reason, Zion just doesn't really go off when he plays LeBron like that. So I just think Pelicans are very much on fraud watch. And if you're on fraud watch, you're probably not going to beat LeBron in a game of that magnitude. So,
wish we got this effort from the Pelicans Friday night.
All the Trey Murphy 45 footers weren't going in tonight. That was really the difference in the game. You know, I think they started 5 of 20 from three tonight. The Pelicans did. And they went 10 for 13 in the second quarter against the Warriors the other night. So sometimes it's that simple. And those, the Warriors have had some difficulties defending the three, I'd say, but I felt like they played good defense the other night. Not to talk about that game too much, but I felt like they played pretty good defense on a lot of those shots last night. The other night, they just went in, and the Pels get a lot of the same looks, maybe even easier ones today, and they don't go in. So, and that's also the risk you run into with a play-in game, right? Like, could play great defense against Sac on Tuesday, but if they're just making shots out of their ass, you know, good luck. You know, if they make 18 threes, you're going to be in a bad spot. So that's why you want to avoid the play-in in the first place, to avoid these one-game scenarios that are essentially like an NCAA tournament game.
Let's talk about the Kings and Warriors real quick. Kings are probably playing the worst basketball of any of the play-in teams right now. Like, this is an advantageous matchup for the Warriors right now. Obviously, they lost Malik Monk, who destroyed the Warriors this year. Herter, their other great shooter, gone too. And I think that's kind of contributing to De'Aaron Fox coming down to earth just a little bit relative to what he was last year. Like, less, like, obviously Keegan Murray can still shoot and Harrison Barnes can hit some shots here and there, but like, they don't have the spacing that they had last year. 4-6 in their last 10. I don't know. We know the Kings. What makes this a fun matchup is like, how much is there to really preview about it? We know how they want to play. It'd be interesting to see if they start Trace. I guess that's kind of the big thing. I think they will, but also Steve could go back to Looney just because it's the Kings and Looney had so much success against Sabonis. I don't know if the Warriors want to play two bigs, though. I don't know. How do you guys foresee that playing out?
I think it's advantageous for the Warriors, right? Like, I think with the injection of Trace and like how Sacramento typically guards Golden State, I think he's going to live at the rim, like he has been doing. I think they'll be able to bottle up Fox a little bit easier, like you said, with the lack of the guys that provide some of that more perimeter scoring punch and ball handling responsibilities. So, I mean, and they kind of have like this big brother, little brother thing still going on, even though the Kings act like it's not there. Like, it's definitely a mental hurdle for them that I don't think they'll be able to get over. And I don't think Steph, Clay, and Dre want to go in there and just end their season to little brother like that. So I think they're going to go in there guns blazing and try to take him out for sure.
I'm looking at it right now, and this matches my memory. Trace played a whopping 4 minutes and 41 seconds against the Kings all season. Obviously, they played the Kings 3 times in the first month. Trace was in the rotation at that point, but the other matchup, he was still not in the rotation. So that's kind of, I don't want to say it's the X factor, but like, we just haven't seen how Trace fits into this matchup.
In theory, it could be an advantage, you know. Yeah. Obviously, the Kings, you're going to have tape on them because you're doing your scouts, but sure, they don't really know what that matchup looks like for them. And you would think that an athletic big can give Sabonis some trouble, at least in terms of Sabonis having to defend the rim. Because like Justin said, they're used to playing against Looney and Draymond, and they can just sag off those guys and not really worry about any type of threat. Should be able to beat them over the top a good bit, get some lobs of Trace, kind of loosen things up. But it's definitely, I think it's definitely a good matchup, all things considered. And I think, you know, it's last year in the playoffs, Sac really tried to push the pace in that series. And I think part of that was just, you know, we have younger legs. We want to tire these guys out. We think we can wear them down over 7 games. You're missing Monk. And that was a lot of, I mean, obviously, De'Aaron's still going to, and Herter. But And that's a lot of their half court pace is Herter moving off the ball and getting into actions quickly and having him come up, pin downs, handoffs, all that type of stuff. But not having Monk in those non-Fox minutes really hurts their pace because Davion's not doing that. Keon Ellis isn't doing that. Nobody else is doing that in the same way. And Monk, I mean, obviously, De'Aaron gave him a ton of issues last year, but I think there was, I would say, two of the three games that Zach won, Monk was almost the bigger issue. Game six in Golden State, they had no answers for him. And I want to say one of the games in Sac 2, they had absolutely no answers. So no Monk is huge to me. And I think he'd be out through the first round anyway, so there's no chance he plays. So yeah, it's a good matchup for the Warriors. I'm confident that they should go in there and win that. But like I said earlier, if the Kings make a bunch of threes, it's anybody's game. So, but I would pick the Warriors to win the game for sure. I would think they're probably the Vegas favorite heading into that game. I'd be pretty surprised if they weren't.
Yeah, line's not out yet, but I'm assuming they're going to be favored, and I'm assuming the over-under is going to be pretty high in general. Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app. With more than 3 million members, it's the easiest and most exciting way for you to get in on the action while you watch your favorite sports and players. You just pick more or less on two or more player stats and watch the winnings roll in. Prize Picks is really simple to play. I can make my picks, submit my entry in less than 60 seconds, and boom, play in the game. I will be making picks on the Warriors and Kings tomorrow when I put out that preview pod with Andy. I'll give you guys a little teaser. I will be taking the over on Steph Curry and probably everyone the entire way through. Make sure to download the Prize Picks app today and use the promo code LIGHTYEARS for your first deposit match up to $100. That's right. You deposit $100, Prize Picks gives you an additional $100 for free with the promo code LIGHTYEARS. Getting back to it right now. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to dig in on this one a little more later on, but it's the Kings. We know them. Also, is there like a more annoying fan base for Warrior fans right now? I've been thinking about it. Like, I think I probably loathe Laker fans the most. NorCal, SoCal thing. Also, the LeBron thing. Also, the Lakers kind of try to little brother Warrior fans in general. But Kings are by far the most annoying to me. I think last playoffs, just like the noise, like coming in, like acting like they'd accomplished something the entire way. I'm like, you guys should probably just be happy to be here. You're more of kind of a cute story than an actual like playoff team at this point. You haven't done anything and you're talking very, very big. So plus they took my ace. So it's going to be a little added bonus for me.
They might be the most annoying, but you know, how the mighty have fallen. We're worried about the Kings fan base now.
I'm not worried about them. It's like, I said annoying. Annoying was the word I went with.
I think, I mean, only because Memphis is out of everything.
True. Right now. Yeah. I forgot about Memphis.
Yeah, for me, they take the cake. They're just, it's ridiculous with them. Kings yeah, definitely into the chat for sure.
They took off the year and I was like, you know what? I don't miss you guys. I forgot about the Grizz existing at all there. All right, so Warriors beat the Utah Jazz last game of the season. Everyone got pulled in the third quarter when it was abundantly clear it didn't matter who was going to win. We got to see some nice Usman Garuba minutes. Everything was just excellent on that front. What I was going to say here is someone shared this with me, which caught me completely off guard. They said, technically, this could be the last home game that Klay plays for the Warriors, which I'll go on the record and say, I don't believe it. I think they're going to re-sign him, but it's an unknown. Both play-in games will be on the road. There is a very real chance this is the last time he plays in front of Warrior fans in a Warriors jersey in Chase Center, wherever it may be. And I want to just talk about real quick, because I feel like, I don't want to say it's gone under the radar, but like since he got benched, since they moved him to the bench, he's been playing the best basketball he's played in a couple of years, I think. I don't know. Do you guys agree with me on that in general? Like the last couple of months, he's just been as good as I've seen him in general. I'm pulling up his stats just so we can reflect on him.
Yeah, I think January to March of last year, he was kind of super, super hot from three. But yeah, I agree overall with the point. He's been playing just as good as you can possibly ask him to play probably at this point in his career.
Yeah, I mean, he's playing. I just think he's playing more within himself. He's definitely reined in his shot selection a little bit. And he's just playing smarter. And I also think pairing him with a guy like Trace is very helpful, you know, because a lot of times when he's coming off pin downs from Loon, it's like there's really no threat to go to the rim and Clay's not turning the corner. So it just ends up being a trap. And then maybe you're dumping it off to Looney, who's not finishing the play, or Clay just ends up forcing up a bad shot over kind of one or two arms. So I think just playing more minutes with Trace has freed him up a little bit. And it just makes things that much easier for him. At least there's some threat rolling to the rim now. I think he's just playing smarter. He's playing, honestly, he's playing how I expected him to the whole year. So it's a good sign going into the playoffs, but I think that also, I don't know, it dovetails into other issues, right? The fact that they're asking him to kind of try to be what he needs to be for this team probably isn't fair at this stage of his career, considering the injuries. So,
if we want to go meta roster issue, one, in theory, Wiggins was going to be the guy to step up so Clay could kind of fall into this role. And I'd love to meet anyone out there who still thinks that's going to happen. I think Andrew Wiggins is who he is. I know they're out there, but
they're definitely out there.
The fundamental problem is they kind of occupy the same role, which is they should be your third option on offense, functioning off ball. They can kill you because the first two guys get too much attention. Neither of them are suited to be a second option at this stage in their career. It is what it is. Clay is better offensively than Wiggins. Like, Clay can be 50 years old and two guys will chase him when he comes off a screen because of the shooting. But Wiggins is obviously better defensively, more athletic, younger, doesn't have both of his legs surgically repaired, all that sort of stuff. So it's like, if we want to talk Warriors big picture issues, like, I don't want to say one of those guys has to go, but considering the cap and all the factors, that's the easiest route for them to upgrade their roster, which is turn one of those guys into a significantly better player.
I mean, it depends on how you look at it, right? Like, are you just letting CP walk? Then, yeah, the best option is to either sign and trade Clay or move Wiggins' deal. If you're willing to stay over the second apron, which we've heard that they're not, if you're willing to, then you can move CP3's deal with whatever else you want, and you can get to a big contract. We'll see. And they definitely kind of do occupy the same role. They're both scorers who can't really create for anybody else, which is right. An issue, you know, and that's really where the issue comes in. And I think that also, even though it has been a good lineup, but when you put Clay, Wiggins, and Kuminga out there all at the same time, you really don't have anybody else who can create for somebody besides Steph. They can all score, but especially with the way the Warriors play, it can get a little bit murky sometimes, especially against the best defenses. And that lineup I think that lineup could be used in the playoffs and it could do well because it does have a very good net rating this year. I think it's the Warriors' best net rating lineup. But just offensively, things can get a little bit, they can just clog up sometimes because you don't really have a lot of ball movers. You have a lot of guys looking to score and not really much else out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree too. I mean, it's guys that's looking to score, but if either one of them could dribble the ball, then it would be a lot, you know, better. Things would flow a lot easier, obviously. And sure. Clay has a better handle than Wiggins does in terms of getting to where he wants to get to. But, like, he doesn't have the burst that Wiggins has. So if you could somehow give him burst or give Wiggins a handle, then it would be a lot easier. But since you don't, it definitely comes down to probably one of those guys just, you know, being the release valve offensive player. Like, okay, we already know what Steph's going to do in terms of the attention he grabs. If you have another guy who would grab some attention, then obviously whoever is left between Clay or Wiggins would get a lot of just more easy shots, wide open shots they can knock down. And then they start to be like overqualified for their role instead of underqualified for the roles they're currently playing in right now.
And I think that points to kind of a bigger issue with the team, right? They're asking almost everybody on the roster to do more than they're really capable of. And that's why guys end up looking worse. I mean, this isn't all of Wiggins' issues, but I mean, a lot of the reason he probably didn't look great early in the season, besides maybe not being in the best shape, is just they're asking him to do too much. You know, instead of saying, hey, slash to the rim, make some open threes and play some defense, they're asking him to create. He's not going to do that. Like, we're in what, year 10 with Wiggins? Like, it's just not going to happen at this point. So that it's just a bigger roster issue overall.
And the other point is they also need to just find a way to get more size. Both guys have great wing size, but we saw how, like, what's Trace really? 6'8"? You know, six, eight, but six, he nine. knows, but he knows how to play center. You know, like he understands screening, understands positioning, that sort of thing. In general, his team also just needs to find a way to find a second scorer and then find role players who aren't 6'3". So that's kind of where we're at with them on that front. I wanted to ask you guys just kind of meta question. Like, what's your biggest takeaway from the Warriors this regular season? I'm going to lead it off, which is if anyone had hope that last year was, quote unquote, the exception and a mulligan, I feel like this year was kind of proof that this roster is a 45-ish win team. If this is the roster you're going to assemble, 2022 was more lightning in a bottle and 2023 was closer to who these guys are. Andrew Wiggins had a out of his mind season. This is kind of more who he is. He's not a bad player, but he's an inconsistent guy. You know, Jordan Poole shot like a mini Steph Curry for a season. He went back to being Jordan Poole the following season, and now he's no longer on the team. Looney, I'm still shocked what he was able to accomplish considering, you know, he has no hips and all those injuries. And all this kind of points to, like, they don't have bad players, but it's an incomplete roster. And take 2022 for what it was, a magical ride of a bunch of things happening which were unlikely to happen again.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, I guess my overall takeaway from this season is that, like, I agree that this team is closer to just mid than they are elite, right? And that 2022 is something that just probably can't be replicated again within this current roster. They need to, like, insert some talent, like major talent, some size and stuff like that. But I do think they're closer to contending again than being far away, if that makes sense. Like, I don't think they're like a complete overhaul away, but I do think they're like two pieces maybe away from being a legitimate scary team, right? I'm not going to say they're just going to beat Denver out the gate if they just get a center or something like that. Sure. But I do think you look at the season as a whole, right? Like, Klay has been inconsistent early in the season, but he's kind of stabilized once he kind of had his ego death and, like, you know, went into this second phase or this final phase of his career mentally. He's looking a lot more like the player they need him to be going forward, willing to come off the bench if need be, willing to concede shots and stuff like that. Still a high level player. Like, saw something earlier today, is like 19 a game on like really great splits, like 45, 40 and 90 something for the last portion of the season. Draymond in pockets has shown that he's still an elite level defender. He's still one of those guys that connects and makes all these plays that contribute to winning. And Steph is still Steph, even though he may be, you know, slightly not as what he was, you know, a few years ago, he's still good enough to be a one on the championship team. And I think if you give him enough support, you'll have more of his highs rather than his lows, right? When you run him to the ground, the lows start to become a little more frequent. So they just need some more talent, something to shake everything up so you're not just doing the same thing over and over again. And I think they're a lot closer to be contending again than not. So that's my takeaway.
Yeah, I mean, just to dovetail off of what you guys said, size and talent matter in the NBA. It like, at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. You look around the league and all the younger up-and-coming teams, they all have these giant starting fives. Look at Denver, you look at Minnesota, OKC to a certain extent, they definitely have some problems on the interior, but all their guys are big and long.
Chet's a legit 7 foot, though.
Right, exactly, yeah.
205 pounds.
He's already one of the best rim protectors in the NBA. Yeah. You know, and I think just the lack of overall size on the roster has just created so many issues the past 2 years. This isn't a 1 year trend at this point. It's a 2 year trend. Like, all of the, and you know, we can talk.
I would also say it gave them issues in 2022. Like, they went through some serious lulls. They just happened to, I don't want to say get the right road in the playoffs, but it didn't really make it that big of a difference.
Well, they started off the season 18-2, and I think they got to 28-6 before Draymond got injured. So they had this huge buffer. But for the majority of the season, they were like a 500 team. I want to say over the last 50 games or so, they were basically 500, maybe a couple games above that. So playing an 82 game, like, great. You think you have a great playoff closing lineup. Fantastic. That doesn't work over 82 games in the regular season, especially now because of the way teams play. And you just need, there's just so many times this year where I'm watching Chris Paul rotate over as the weak side helper as a pick and roll comes, or Pods close out on a 6'8 shooter. And it's like, this isn't the player's fault. They're doing the correct things. They're making the right rotations. They're in the right spots. They're just too small, or they're not athletic enough. They're not this, they're not that. And so it just, after a while, it just became redundant and exhausting to watch the same things over and over again. And you could say maybe some of that is Steve, right? He always wants to have ball handlers on the floor. He prefers guys who are smarter. Okay, that's fine. Get some bigger guys who can handle the ball. Get some bigger guys who are a little bit smarter, you know, so we don't run into these issues. As a front office, part of your job is knowing the weaknesses of your coach. And I feel like maybe they leaned a little bit more into Kerr-style players this year. I think they did. And I think they expected more out of Dario. You know, and so like a lot of things went wrong this year with guys that they brought in or were already on the roster. But at the end of the day, you just weren't big enough and you weren't talented enough. That's what it comes down to. And I don't think it's really any more complicated than that.
Before we get to, before we let people sound off in here, what would you guys consider success the rest of this way? Cause like we can talk about what they need to do in the off season, but I'd still like to see them beat the Kings. I'd like to see them make the playoffs, you know, all that sort of stuff. So like at this stage, what would you consider positive momentum? And then my second question for you is, what do you want to see out of them? However many games they have left, that's going to make you feel better about next year. Why don't you go first, Justin?
Well, I guess the success would be to get into the playoffs and don't get swept. I think that would be pretty good considering, you know, you're going to be playing one of the top three seeds. Who is it looking like it's going to be? OKC.
It's only OKC because they can only be the eighth seed. So, yeah.
Yeah, so I think if you get in there, you play OKC, you don't have home court advantage, obviously. So if you can steal at least two games, I think they can beat OKC, honestly, if they play at their best. But if you make it a series, I think that's a success, considering everything that's gone on to this point. And I would definitely need to see some fight. I would need to see, you know, how Steph is looking against, like, a team that's honed in on him. They know he's really the only offensive generator at a high level on this squad. Can he make something happen? Like, if he has, like, a Kings type of series again where they just can't do anything with them, then it's like, okay, like we know for sure, like he's still that guy, like and you can build upon that and you can show other guys who may be on their way out of their teams across the league, like, yo, Steph is still that guy. Like, if you don't like your situation, you might want to come over here. And maybe something from the young guys too. Like, I think that would be great if we can get some real playoff experience for all of the young guys. We know Moses is now going to go up to 30 minutes a game because it's the playoffs now. So if we can get some experience for those guys and they show some type of flash of things that they can build upon going into next season, I think that's all you can ask for, really.
Yeah, I mean, taking OKC to 6 or 7 would be nice. It'd be nice to get Kuminga some actual playoff experience. Right. He really hasn't had that to this point. He hasn't played in any serious games for any extended period of time. I want to see how that actually looks because I still have my doubts about that at this stage of his career. And that might make some decisions this summer easier. They had him, his value at an all-time high in February. We don't need to go there right now. But yeah, taking OKC to 6 or 7, I think that would actually be a winnable series. Like, all those OKC games were close this season, and they probably should have won 3 of them. They gave up 2 of them up 3 in the last 5 seconds of the game. Like, that's a very winnable series. They are one of the smaller teams in the West. They're not going to kill the Warriors inside, at least not throwing the ball inside. It'll be more like Shea driving, Jaylen driving, maybe some Chet lobs or whatever. But it's not a terrible matchup for the Warriors if they get there. But I mean, in a way, I'm split. You know, do we want these guys battling through a tough first round series and maybe getting to the second round, or do we want them resting for an extra month? You know, like, especially considering their age. Obviously, I'd like to make the playoffs. I'm not saying they should miss the playoffs, and that's what I prefer. But if they don't make the playoffs, I really don't think I'm going to be heartbroken or anything, just because I don't see this team winning a championship. And at the end of the day, there really is a limited number of time these guys have left. Steph will be 37 next year in the playoffs. So every extra round of playoff games is just that much more wear and tear because these games are just more intense, you know? So it's going to be like, even just going to 2 rounds last year, I think that was exhausting for those guys. There's an extra month of basketball at their ages. So we'll see. I obviously, like I said, I prefer to make the playoffs. But if they lose in the play-in, I'm not going to be broken like I was a couple years. Like, the Memphis game, losing that a couple years ago sucked. You know, I won't have that same feeling as I did then now, I don't think, at least.
I don't think they got exhausted from the playoffs last year. I'm going to be honest with you. I think I don't think that was the fatigue that set in. I think Steph playing the most minutes he's played since 2016 was the real exhaustion, which gets to a meta thing on the roster and all that sort of stuff. The two things I'd like to see, echoing what Justin says, anytime Steph can put together a signature performance to remind everyone, I'm still the guy, I'm still as good as anyone in this league, that's going to help you in free agency. You know, I don't know how other teams, players view the Warriors. Like, is it a sinking ship? Is it over? Or is it still an attractive free agent destination? I'm positive if Steph plays well, it'll be more the latter, a positive free agency destination. And then secondarily, I just want to see, I think it's big for Kuminga because the Warriors can't keep overvaluing him as the future and not playing him, not having him playing games that matter. You know, like he really is kind of a player you think can ascend to all to being an all-star, he shouldn't be getting 10 minutes in a playoff play-in game. He should be playing more minutes than Pajemski. And I'm not convinced he will. You know, I'm not convinced he's going to play more minutes than Trace either. Jackson Davis. We'll see. I want to be wrong about that, though. I want to walk away from Tuesday's game against Sacramento to be like, oh, wait. He really does look like he could be Jaylen Brown 2.0. He really does look like the next Siakam. Insert, you know, I'm not going to compare him to the highest tier of wings, like the KDs and Kawhis, but like that next tier of guys. Like, he looks like he could be one of those guys. Like, at a certain point, you have to have performances in games that matter, not just performances against a tanking Utah Jazz team. Yeah. So,
I mean, yeah. On the Kuminga front, it just tells me a lot that this Warriors team looked the most like the Warriors, quote unquote, when Trey started getting more playing time and not Kuminga. Kuminga was very good for a couple months there. He was scoring a ton of points. He was doing it efficiently, but at the same time, a lot of the wins just felt kind of flimsy. They didn't feel solid. Like over the course of the last month, as Trey's been playing more, you just felt, I think, at least me personally, I just felt better about the direction of the team. And some of that is the roster build. I'm not putting this all on Kuminga. It's just like, they don't really have a big who can play with him per se, you know, because you don't have a big who can stretch the floor, right?
I mean, the question
at the same time, he's a three who can't shoot, and then defensively he's not a four, so it's a weird fit, you know. He's still got a lot of things to improve on if he really wants to reach his ceiling.
They should get Chet. They'll be good. That's a perfect front court fit, right? Like you know, but yeah, you're right. Like it's funny, Draymond was classically considered a tweener, but he's not a tweener because he can play multiple positions at a high level. Kuminga is actually a tweener. Offensively, he's a four, but defensively, he's a three. And unless you find like the perfect big to go with him, you either play their small ball lineup, which exploded offensively, but was somewhere between 12th and 15th defensively for the stretches it started, which is to say kind of middle of the road. It wasn't getting stops against good teams. Or you put him at the three, and if it's him, Draymond, and a big, like, the offense is just miserable because there's not enough shooting between them. So all this points back to like why it's not like I'm down on Kuminga. It's just they're a year away from making a big contract decision with him. And you know what? He could drop 30 on the Kings. He could just use athleticism and destroy Sabonis and Harrison Barnes and look every bit the player that the Warriors think he can be. And maybe it is kind of like next year he takes a step and that'll be the thing you need to get better while just like fixing your roster around the edges a little bit. Or maybe it's the opposite. Maybe he's sitting in this range where you're like, he's good, but I don't know if he's a building block player. And do we move him before the rest of the league fully figures that out? You know? So I think beyond Steph doing Steph things, like, that's the biggest thing we can learn from whatever the playoffs gives us.
I think that window's already shut for what it's worth. I don't think his value will be higher than it was in February. Because now, if you're trading him, a team's looking to have to instantly extend him. Basically, you have one.
Sure. If you're acquiring him, you're not doing it for a 12-month rental. Doing it because you think he's, you know, the future, your small forward position.
Right. So I think that window's mostly shut. The last time they'd really have a chance to deal him, in my opinion, is this summer with CP, just tying essentially CP's non-guaranteed to him. But yeah, I mean, it's almost like, I don't want to put it in a bad way, they're not stuck with him, but you better hope that he improves, because there's not many other paths if you're going to keep him on the roster, you know?
Sure. You shouldn't have to worry about where and when you buy tickets to your next big event. Game Time is the fast and easy way to buy tickets for all sports, music, comedy, and theater events near you. Earlier this year, I wanted to go to the Warriors Spurs games because I want to see Wemby in person. Like, I was very curious to see what he looked like in person. Ironically, he was terrible, and it was a very miserable watch of a game. But that doesn't change the fact that pregame, I was very hyped to check out who Wemby was. And when I was looking for tickets because I missed my window over the summer, they were expensive. So then I get on Game Time, and lo and behold, it was a Friday night game. Wednesday night or Thursday morning, all of a sudden I'm finding tickets on there and they're like face value or less at that point, which is all I wanted. I didn't want, you know, I wasn't about to go pay three times face value to see Wembanyama. Sorry. But Game Time came through, found some great seats, actually got them a little below face value. So you guys should check it out. Game Time is the only ticketing app that gives you complete peace of mind with your purchase. See the view from your seat before you buy it, so you know exactly what to expect when you arrive. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use the code LIGHTYEARS, and you get $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. But again, create the account and redeem the code with code LIGHTYEARS, LIGHTYEARS, for $20 off your first purchase. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by the Energy Enhancement System, or the EES system. If you haven't heard of the EES system, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in the Bay Area or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EES system for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/lightyears to learn more and find a center near you. That is unifiedhealing.com/lightyears. All right, let's get to it. Let's see what people have to say. I'm going to bring Paritosh up here. I can see he's active in the chat. I'm going to let him sound off real quick. I'm suspecting some Steve Kerr slander.
No, I don't think today. It's the end of the season. I'm feeling nice. Anyway, hey, Toby, how's it going? Long time no speak.
What's going on, man?
I know.
Good to hear from you.
So, I just wanted to ask, I don't know, I joined the chat late, but what do we think about Chris Paul's year this year? That's what's going to be my question.
That's a great question.
They could have gotten it done for $8 million to Tyus Jones. Like, no. Look, Chris had a very solid season, but you're paying him $30 million. You could have made the same trade with Washington and probably got Tyus. I mean, it might have cost a little bit more, right? Because you're getting young guys from them. But you could have canvassed the league for other trades. Like, if you're spending $30 million, you might want to put it towards a couple guys, or go get Porzingis, right? Like, CP was fine. He was very solid in the aggregate, I think, but it led to too many issues overall. Like, too many times I'm watching Steph, Pods, and CP play together. Like, it's just not tenable over long stretches of play.
I don't know.
But here's my counterpoint.
Did you see Draymond try to fight someone off the bench against the Pelicans? You see who held him back? I don't know what it says about the Warriors, but clearly they valued him replacing Andre Iguodala as that super smart but incredibly adult person off the bench. I think he did everything you could ask of him. I also think the overarching point Tommy's making is correct, which is all that stuff is amazing, but you can't overcome the fact that he's a 5'11 guy playing the power forward on defense. Like, what was that? Like, he was playing the low man in some of their defensive lineups, and it's just
him rotating from the weak side, like the roller, not even seeing him while he's trying.
Lost the first game of the season against the Suns. Yeah. It was literally that, and it continued all the way through the season.
Yeah. he's doing the Cornette closeout where he's jumping like 10 feet away from the guy, except he's like a foot shorter than Luke Cornette. Like, it's just, yeah.
The thing that pissed me off the most is we didn't even get the favorable whistle that usually comes with Chris Paul. Like, in fact, Chris Paul did not get whistles. Like, we thought it was going to be the other way around, where Steph gets more whistles.
Yeah, appreciate you, Paritosh. I was going to say, my takeaway, now that I'm thinking about it out loud, and I'm like kind of being facetious with the leadership stuff, but like, I hope the Warriors take away from all this is all those intangibles don't matter if you don't have the requisite size and athleticism on the roster. I'm sure he did a ton to help bring the team together. It's very obvious he did, and it got like, it makes me want to root for him, cause I liked having him off the bench in those roles. But like, to your point, you only get so much money. You only get so many contracts. Like they need someone over 6'7", preferably two or three of them.
Yeah, like I said, if he's a $5 million player, great. And you could technically do that in the offseason, but then you're kind of forfeiting your best trade chip, possibly, just because he's an expiring deal. So
I think Looney is their best trade chip because he's a non-guarantee.
So is Chris a team option?
He's a non-guarantee, but you have to guarantee for matching purposes. There's a difference in the construct there, whereas Looney only $3 million is guaranteed, and it's not his – his non-guarantee is after free agency opens, whereas Chris is like, you kind of have to make that decision on draft night. So it's not undoable, but anyway. Nothing you're saying is inaccurate. All right, let's get Tatjan up here. Let's get our guy, the Moody Mafia, up here.
Did I just hear someone just try to praise CP3? Please tell me I'm drunk. Please tell me. God.
Come on, man. Maybe we should talk about that. Warrior villains for the season. Chris Paul still doesn't hit my, I don't want to say top 10 because there's only so many people around a basketball team, but he's not in my top five.
He is not in the top 10, but we used to have standards. Like, come on, let's be real here.
Number one's Bob. Number two might be Joe at the moment. I might put Wiggins number three, personally. That's me.
Wiggs is my number one, but let's just be real.
Kirk number four. Kent number five. I think we're sensing.
Careful.
I think we're sensing a theme where my anger is. I can't get mad at Chris Paul for like coming in and doing exactly what he was. I might put Draymond a higher issue than him right now, but. Yeah. Okay.
I'm not mad at Chris. All of the issues that Chris stem from either a front office issue or a coaching issue. It's not Chris's fault. He came in and did exactly what they asked. It was just a bad allocation of resources. Then it was Steve playing him too much.
Give me your Warrior top five villains. I want to hear. I'll let Justin, you go first.
For this season,
or just evergreen. Who are you sitting thinking about? This season.
I mean, for this season, I gotta probably go with Andrew first. I just think the fall off this season was just too much to overcome. I think even if he wasn't an all-star like he was in 2022, just playing how he has played, I guess, for the last month or so, if he had been like this for the whole season, which is honestly the bare minimum that we should have expected from him, I think the season goes a little bit differently. I think maybe he's 1A and Draymond's 1B. I think the whole suspensions thing was just too much also for them to overcome. Since Draymond's gotten back, they've been upper tier mid, right? Like, or like bottom of the top tier or something like that. So, I mean, they're probably over 50 wins if he doesn't get suspended for that long. Like, then I think Steve he's had a subpar season. I don't think he's like completely to blame, but I think with the resources that he was given, he could have did a better job of mixing and matching things and like not playing the tiny lineups and stuff like that, even though the roster construct is just like, it puts him in a predicament where he has to get everything right every single night. But I think it was just too many nights where he didn't get it right. So I got to give it to Steve. Then front office / Mike.
Shaq. We'll put him as one entity is fine. I was just being facetious, listing all the names.
I wouldn't even give a fifth. I think it's just those four. Right there.
I like it. I will say, on the Steve front, how much did you roll your eyes when he's like, I should have got Trace in there more? It's just, there's been times this year when I've been just like so fed up with it, but like the post game,
Moody needs to play more. Oh my goodness. I've seen him hear that so many times.
The mea culpa after they give away a game where he made the wrong substitution to take out a hot like player's rolling for someone who is not just, I can't do it anymore.
Can I give my top five villains?
Yeah, go for it. Top three, top five, whatever you feel like.
Joe Lacob, Joe Lacob, Joe Lacob, Joe Lacob, Joe Lacob.
Relax.
I'm joking, but it still comes down to the front office for me.
Okay.
It always will. And I think that, I mean, it led to a lot of the issues we saw this year. Like, okay, Draymond acted like an ass. Like, can't excuse that. But you got to know who Draymond is. A lot of that is just his frustration about the situation, right? He's a crazy competitive dude, and this doesn't excuse him trying to knock out Nurkic during an NBA game. Like, that doesn't excuse that. But why is he battling Yusuf Nurkic for 20 minutes a night to begin with? Like, right? And Draymond talked about this multiple times this season. You know, when he's had these injury issues. And he's saying, you know, it's really a lot different when I have to, and I think he started talking about it when Trey's finally got into the rotation. It's a lot different from having to battle a five for 20 to 25 minutes a night versus doing it for 5 to 10 minutes a night, you know? So you're seeing, and kind of same thing with Clay, a lot of his, I think, bad play was linked to just number one, not being who he was, but also just not having the proper guys to get him the looks he's used to, you know? So like, even with all of Poole's flaws last year, Jordan got Clay a lot of open looks. And that was part of Clay's really good stretch last year where he was 25 a game. A lot of that was feeding off of the downhill pressure that Poole could get on the rim.
Dante, you know, to a certain extent.
Yeah. So it's just like until they actually decide to get serious or just say, hey, we're not trying to compete for titles anymore, it will always come back to the front office for me. It always will.
Yeah, I mean, they talked about their optionality. I really thought they were going to make some moves at the deadline. It felt like in mid-January it was inevitable they were going to do something. And then the Decky tragedy happens. And then after that, they start getting a little hot. They looked like reborn. They figured some stuff out. And of course, the front office didn't make a move. And what happened? They kind of were who we thought they were, you know. It all averages out to about a 45-win team, which is what they are, you know. So, I'm with you. I'm going to be a little nicer about the front office, but it's with the caveat of I expect changes in July, and I will not be so nice if we pass through there. And the talking point away from it is we changed the coaching staff to get Andrew going, and we really think Kuminga is going to make a big year four leap. And I mean, you could already hear Bob saying it. You could like that. That would be my own personal hell, just having to watch that again. In general, anyway, I don't want to put that into the universe.
Do we?
You mean not training for Paul George or any number two for the past 2 years is going to lead you to be upset for when it does happen for the third year in a row? Like, oh my goodness.
Do we think that a CP plus Kuminga offer to Toronto beats Indy's offer in February? Because that's what I've been thinking about the last couple of days. Because Siakam, since he's been in Indy and when he's been healthy, he's been fringe all NBA player.
Yeah,
you know,
he's an excellent player.
Do we think that offer beats Indy's offer, whatever that Bruce Brown and whatever that ended up being?
It was three firsts, which are likely going to convert somewhere between 15 and 25. Like it's three number 20 picks, essentially. They didn't give up a lottery pick, like, oh, this is the New Jersey or sorry, the Brooklyn Nets is unprotected pick or something like that. I would think they'd have to attach another pick, honestly. I think you'd need to give Kuminga plus a pick, and you could sell the idea that that's more valuable than three picks.
I agree. And I probably would have pulled the trigger, too.
Yeah, I mean, someone in the chat saying that doesn't fix the team. Probably not, but it does get them closer. I think if they get Siakam, you're in a situation where you just have to maybe flip a role player for a different type of role player instead of like the harder thing to find is finding a number two option.
Thank you. Definitely. And to say, okay, he wasn't going to re-sign here. Okay. Well, your job as an organization as a front office is you get the guy in the building and you sell him on why he should stay. He's saying he's not going to resign. Guys have said stuff before and they haven't followed through on it.
I also don't buy that.
Yeah, I don't either, number one. But even if you start with that premise, that's totally fine. He says he's not going to resign with Golden State. Mm-hmm. You get him in the building and then you sell him on what you're trying to build here. That's your entire job as an organization. You think if he spends a couple months playing with Steph, playing with and kind of getting the environment of the building, which apparently was much better this year. You know, I think Q talked about it in a recent interview on 95.7. He said the vibe of the team has been great all year. You know, it wasn't last year from that standpoint. So you get him in the building and you try to sell him on what you're doing. And if you can't get that done, then you're not doing your jobs properly, honestly. It all just comes away as like insecurity from a front office and being scared to like actually put a line in the sand and get something done.
I can be sold on the idea that Siakam, they really only have one shot at making the all-in trade for a number two. I could be sold that there's better moves to be made than Siakam, but I need to see it. You know what I'm saying? Like how many years are you going to kick the can down the road is really my question. Like, are we going to go through July and be like, well, you know, Paul George is 34 and he wants a 5-year deal. And is that smart and blah, blah, blah. Okay. So we're just going to wait till next offseason when, you know, Giannis might become available. And it's like, well, it is kind of, you don't have that many more seasons to kick down the road. You won in 2022, you ran it back. It didn't work, but there were extenuating circumstances. So you thought if you fix the vibe and try to run that team, you could recreate it. I don't think you're going to recreate 2022, and that's fine. Time to move.
With all the Kobe comparisons to Steph, I'd just like to point out that Kobe demanded a trade, and the front office said, like, no, we're going to put our foot down and get Kobe some help. And look at that. They repeated. So fix your shit, front office, please.
Appreciate you, Tashaun. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to delve too much deeper into this conversation just because, again, that's all we're going to talk about for about 3 months after the playoff run's done or whatever it is. It could be one game. It could be a series, you know, like we'll see. And that's the other part of it. It's like, okay, options were limited at the deadline. There'll be more in the summer. All right. You know, over the next month, we'll have a better idea of who's really going to come available. You know, like right now, it's all just like, all right, Paul George, maybe. For all I know, the Clippers could win the title and they'll extend him if they do. I don't think the Clippers will. So
yeah, I don't either. But I think that's just always a convenient excuse. Oh, there's going to be more options next time. You can just say that in perpetuity. You know, you can just keep saying, oh, there's going to be more options in the summer. There's going to be more options at the deadline. We hear it every time. So eventually, you got to act. You know, and
sure,
I would assume Justin's at the same point. It's just like make a decision, right? Either just say you're just going to go all in on the young guys, or we're actually going to go get a second guy to help do this thing one more time. Because that's the point they're at right now.
Yeah. And honestly, like, we keep talking about two timelines. Our guy, Fake Logic, is constantly brought this back up. There's really three timelines. They have, like, all of their picks beyond the, you know, like, 2026, 27, 2028, 29, 30. They have all these first-round picks. So it's like, if you go in now, sure, you may suck after Steph is officially done by the time 2027 comes around or something like that, but you have all the firsts for the next years after that. Or you can move those firsts and keep the young guys you have now and say, okay, like, we're going to just stick with our young guys that we have now and ride those guys until they're done, right? So they might not get any picks when they're in their prime, but we use the picks that we had in the future to bring some guy in that can help win now. So, like, hoarding
I 100% agree with you. The last thing I'm going to say, and this maybe is why I'm a little more optimistic on the summer than you guys, is I just can't believe Steve Kerr would sign a 2-year contract and Steph and all those guys without some inclination that they're going to take the next 2 years seriously. Like, I don't think those dudes want to sign up for being the Trojan horse for a rebuild project, which is, you know, the direction it could go if they'd never make a move, right? So,
I think this is the last thing we need to say on, you know, trades and draft picks for now. But I think the biggest like line of crap that we've been sold over the past year, a couple months, and this is coming from local and national media, is that somehow the Warriors don't have as many assets as other contenders. They have more than anybody else. They have more young guys and they have more picks. So they have the flexibility, the optionality to do whatever they want this summer. Whether they can execute is an entirely different question. Where they want to execute,
I will say, the only thing I will point out is I don't know if their young players are as revered around the league as they are locally. Bob Fitzgerald's not the GM of other teams.
I mean, so they may be the most sought after young guys that are actually going to be available. I think the young guys that are better than them are just not on the
right
on the table. So
yeah. Nobody's trading Chet. Nobody's trading
Wemby's. Wemby's not on the table.
No, no, yeah. Unfortunately,
exactly.
No.
Hey, how are we doing?
What's up, man? How are you?
Doing all right. I completely missed this game. So I was assuming there wasn't much to watch, and I kind of just took the over-under on actually spending time with my family. But the question I did want to bring up is that in our previous contentions with OKC this year, Trace was a non-factor. Either he didn't play or he actually just played garbage time. And we see the fives that Trace really flourishes over are the Wembys. And the thin, lengthy builds like Claxton and Wemby and that kind of five. Sure. What do you? I was gonna say he flourished under Giannis too. But I mean, what do you think that's gonna add to the series? Do you think that might be one of those matchups that we kind of just depend on down in the low post? Or I don't know. Just I'd like to hear you guys' take on that.
It's a fun one. Like at the risk of jinxing the fact that the Warriors aren't going to play the Thunder, I think it's a fun matchup because the Thunder are kind of playoff built in the sense of they don't really have big men. Like Chet's very switchy. He's not like a traditional low post guy though. So like they can match up pretty well with the Warriors on that front. But to this point, I'm looking this up. Similar to Sacramento, Trace played 4 minutes and 33 seconds against the Thunder all season. Also, like Sacramento, they played the Thunder four times in like the first month, got him out of the way. There was a one Steph Curry like floater over Chet, which was like maybe the shot of the season. And then three games that were painful to watch them just choke away. So I don't know
how
you guys
see three. Did they go one and three in the season? That's insane.
What did Chet hit two game tying shots against them?
Got fouled on one in OKC. Got fouled on three in OKC.
Oh, there's the fouled and then
the turnaround
outright. Yeah,
the KD turnaround.
Right, it was a Kevin Durant shot.
It was right in front of Joe too. It was hilarious.
Yep, and they got smashed. I think one of them Steph didn't play.
But the three where all the main guys played were 50-50 games the entire way. Yeah. And like, granted, they were in November. These are two different teams, but I think the Warriors are better than they were in November, and I think OKC is too. So. I don't know. It's a fun matchup. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really fun matchup. I think it'd be, like I said, I think of the top three seeds, this is probably the best matchup for the Warriors if they get there.
You think so? I was going to say the Wolves.
I mean, it maybe depends if Kat was going to be back for that series. Is he? Do we know that yet?
I don't know what, I think he's trying to play, but
yeah,
anytime a player's in that, trying to, like, I can't assume you're going to get the best version of Kat, even if he's out there.
My worry with the Minnesota series is Draymond's getting suspended. 100%.
Yeah. I mean,
today.
Okay.
Gordon Hayward might get him suspended. He's a suspension risk in every series, sadly. The one thing I like about the Minnesota matchup is I don't really think they can play more than one style. And the Warriors' biggest advantage is they can figure out what's going to work and then just start exploiting it. Like Steve Joke talks about the feel-out game. Very obnoxious to say that in the playoffs, but it is true. Like Steph is the most versatile offensive player in the NBA. So they'll figure out the best way to exploit your defense, whether it's Steph on ball or off ball, and eventually go to it. And I think we all know what that looks like with Gobert. I think we all know what they're going to end up doing in that matchup, whereas – OKC, by virtue of just being a bunch of wings, they have a better chance of being able to adapt to whatever the Warriors do. All of this is moot it doesn't matter. They're not going to play the Wolves. And maybe just part of me wanted to see Draymond get revenge against Gobert. Like, actually a big part of me. But I still think that would have been the most advantageous matchup.
And then Naz Reid enters the building.
That's true. I'm just
I kind of agree. I think OKC's athleticism and their skill at every position makes it very tough for the Warriors. I do think there's a universe where Lou Dort and Josh Giddey, you know, Josh Giddey can't shoot. So, like, there's a universe right. where Lou Dort also forgets how to shoot again. Like, he goes back to what he was years past, and that really hurts them. And, you know, a lot of the magic that they've been playing with over the course of the season to get the one seed just kind of dissipates, and it turns into can Shea, Jalen, and Chet outduel Steph and the crew. But I just can't see a team with Kat and Gobert as the bigs just, you know, getting over on Golden State. Yeah. And then their offense is very, like, I don't think their offense is built to have a lot of success in the playoffs.
Yeah. It turns into just Ant save us, which can work in a regular season game, but you could see how in a playoff series that could turn into a lot of, like, ugly bailout jumpers.
He's not there yet. As a number one guy, he's I think he's only 22, so I wouldn't expect him to be anyway. But he's definitely not there yet. Shea's definitely more advanced as a shot creator and as a number one option.
But Shea also has two dudes to rely on offensively. Yeah. That, well, I guess he has Cat. Well, I mean, I don't know what version of Cat he's going to get, but like he has more he can rely on. Like if you find a way to frustrate Shea, you can run the offense through Jalen Williams, which is something that Minnesota doesn't necessarily have.
Yeah. And close to him. Yeah. You know, I do think just made an interesting point. Like, obviously, if the Warriors do play OKC in a series, they're not going to guard Josh Giddey. We know that. They'll do that to somebody every series. Mm-hmm. But I think a really interesting trend in the league is there's so many guys shooting not only a lot of threes, but a higher percentage from three, shooting, you know, high 30s, over 40% from three. I'm still not sure how real that is. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, they're doing it over large samples. I don't know how real it is in the playoffs. And this is, I mean, this.
You talk about the Lou Dort. It's the Marcus Smart thing. Like Marcus right. Smart was always that guy for the Celtics.
Yep.
Because, you know, end of the day, him taking a shot's the best option defensively relative to their other guys.
100%. And so this does hurt the Warriors at times in the regular season in one game matchups where a team will just get hot and they get lit up from three. And that's essentially the reason they lose, because they don't necessarily. They value protecting the paint more than they do guarding the three-point line, in my opinion, when you watch them play. And some of that is just the issue of not having enough size on the roster, so guys are always rotating to cover each other and trying to help at the rim. But I think a lot of these guys –
also just like reality. If you right. want to be realistic about it, every team in the NBA takes 35 threes. The league yep. average is 35. They're going to get shots up, I'd rather watch Lou Dort take 10 of them than those be 10 shots that Shea or Chet get, you know? So and that's kind of, and if he hits them, it's like, all right, whatever, man. You know?
Yeah. And those 10 Lou Dort threes can hurt you on a night in November if he's hot. Mm-hmm. But over the course of a 7-game series, I'm taking my chances with that. You know, I don't think he can keep that up for 6 to 7 games. And if he does, shake his hand and he beats you, you know, and that's how the Warriors that's how they've always played. It's just harder to do that in the regular season now than it was 5, 6, 7 years ago when teams were taking less threes.
I also know exactly what will happen if they change their defense to guard Lou Dort. Shea is going to get 40 on 20 shots. Like, it's not even a question what happens in that scenario. So, yeah, I mean, that's a fair point on OKC. They have three, like, studs. Like, I would kill to have Jalen Williams, much less Chet. On the Warriors, I know you guys both agree with that. Yeah. But it is kind of piecemeal around those guys like Lou Dort. Okay. That's a lot of offensive pressure. Josh Giddey, like Justin's right. The guy can't shoot at all. He's not a shooter in any capacity. And then they go to Isaiah Joe and he's smaller than Pods. You know, he could shoot, but like, then you get into like, are they going to play a lineup with Jalen Williams at the power forward? Like, okay, the Warriors are down with that, you know? So yeah. It's one of those things where I think it could be, I think it'll be a pretty even series if they end up playing each other.
Yep.
Yeah. Especially if we get like locked in Wiggins. You know, then Shea is just not sleepwalking to 35. I think Draymond will make Chet's life absolutely hell for his first playoff series of his career. Jalen Williams is the tricky one because it's like, who do we put on him? I don't think. But I mean, if you take the head of the snake that'll be a tough one. But but the other two is like, if you slow them down, then OKC does have other options, but they just aren't as good. And I don't think those options are good enough to beat you four times out of seven.
Yep. Agreed. Can GP2 stay healthy for a full series? Right. Chat saying GP2 on Jalen Williams.
I mean, and that's the other thing about OKC, which plays a favorite. It's one of the only teams you could play Steph, GP2, Clay, Wiggins, and Draymond lineup and not have to worry that you're going to get abused size-wise.
Yeah. So, I think they're like a bottom five rebounding team. I'm pretty
they
sure
are.
OKC
they,
is. Yeah.
Terrible, yeah.
Their issue, they're going to run into, like, the thing was the Lakers wanted them. And, you know, conspiracy theorists are like, are the Lakers going to tank the first play-in game to get OKC? I don't think you can do that. I just don't think you can run that risk in general. But like the Lakers are the exact type of team that would exploit their issues.
Yeah. But I also think, I mean, first of all, you don't want to mess with that, you know, just like tanking a playing game. That's insane. And you get what, an extra 2 or 3 days off if you win the first playing game, like especially for LeBron, AD, those guys are going to value that a ton. They're not going to tank the first game to get OKC. And I don't think Minnesota hasn't given them a ton of issues. It is a tougher matchup for them because of the size. But yeah, I don't see them doing that at all.
Yeah, I guess I just thought about it a little bit. I guess you can put Trace on Chet and put Draymond on Jalen Williams.
They could go that route. I mean, they did that with Jaylen Brown. Yep. Like they put Draymond directly on him because that was the best way to match up on him. So they need to get out of the play-in first. That's why this is a fun one to talk about, and I'll get you guys on if they actually play OKC because we got some fun with it. But I appreciate both guys hopping on. Plug anything you want to plug before we get out of here.
Don't follow me on Twitter.
Follow Tommy on Twitter. Tap in the Golden Spaces pod if you haven't. We love to have you guys over there. Appreciate you, Sam.
Yeah, thanks, Sam.
Later, guys.
See ya.
Peace.